Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I talk about the shift in consciousness that's happening on the planet, and there's nothing more significant than visiting our past in order to realize who we are and how we're going into the future. So tonight, I have back on my show Merlinda Arnold, who is an scholar in Egyptian studies, in a way, I would say. She's a doctor of mythology, and she is a psychotherapist and a healer. But particularly tonight, we are going to be talking about Egypt and the ancient mysteries that lie under the desert there. And Merlinda particularly is connected to a woman who lived in Egypt throughout the 20th century named Om Seti. She was an English woman who had a near-death experience, and she came back from that experience with this memory of her lifetime as an Egyptian, as a priestess of Isis. So we're going to talk about Om Seti. We're going to talk about a trip we are planning to Egypt, which everyone's invited to. You can just check my website or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. But let's get into Egypt, okay?
Yes, let's.
Okay.
That's great.
So I think we should talk about why Egypt is so significant at this moment in our history. Why do we need to return to the past at this time?
Well, I feel at this time with 2012 that we are releasing and letting go and remembering our whole cycle of 26,000 years. And that is ending and a new cycle is beginning. And so in that memory of coming back to our memory, the amnesia that we have really held on to, and it's been
amnesia about our divinity, about our divine connection. That's the amnesia.
Our amnesia about our past. Uh-huh. Yeah, mm-hmm. Even going back further into Septepi, which is the first time the Egyptians tried to chronologize Septepi, especially in Abydos in the Temple of Seti.
Uh-huh.
Seti the first, the pharaoh, Seti the first, and of course, you know, Om Seti lived in Abydos.
Well, no, they don't know that.
Oh, right, okay.
Let me just, we talk about 2012 being the end of the Mayan calendar, and we talk about Egypt, but the thing that connects them both is the work of Hosea Gwaeus, who said that there was a synchronicity of calendars that this cycle of the Mayan long count, which ends on December 21st, 2012, actually began in 3114 BC. And he said at that point there was a unification of Upper and Lower Egypt. So that started a cycle for the Egyptians, started a cycle for the Mayans. It even, some people related to the beginning of the Kali Yuga.
Right.
Or in the beginning of the age of Pisces. So we're coming into the age of Aquarius, and now we are being revisited by Egypt. It's interesting that Egypt is so prominently in the news now with the revolution going on there. So there's this great cycle as the world returns to Egypt and looking at Egypt for this next step. I just think it's very interesting that
And more discoveries are being found in Egypt. I mean, things are being uncovered in the desert. Water is filling up in the ancient Assyrian.
Mm.
I mean, people are. It's like a mecca now to Abydos, which is this, you know, where the template, it was the template of the ancient Egyptian mysteries, where the pageantries were done for thousands and thousands of years.
Uh-huh.
You weren't anyone unless you or one of your ancestors could die in Abydos, or at least a Ka statue be brought to Abydos in the desert.
A Ka statue.
A Ka statue.
A Ka being their soul essence?
A Ka being their body spirit.
Oh. So then this time now, this amnesia where we've forgotten our connection to our divine source is now being remembered by people. And you mentioned that something called Zeptepi. Can you explain that?
Zeptepi is in the pyramid text, which is the oldest documented text. And those texts are not, they're not written on papyrus. They were written on the walls at Saqqara, the earliest pyramids, and then the tombs there. And so they're pictographs, they're stories. And archaeologists, Egyptologists have been trying to, they've been trying to interpret them for a long time. But Om Seti
again, is because we haven't really I mean, I did mention that she was this Egyptian, this English woman that lived, but Om Seti, just a little more background on her because and how she relates to the Egyptian text.
Okay, Om Seti had a near-death experience mm-hmm. in England, in London, and when she was 3 years old, and she was brought to life. And when she was brought to life, a mummy started coming to her, and she remembered where she used to live when she was taken to the British Museum. I think at the age of 9, she saw a temple in Abydos, the Temple of Seti. And she just was so enamored. She just kept saying, I know that's my home. That's my home. And so ever since that time, she worked with Wallace Budge, who was an Egyptologist. He was actually the caretaker of the Egyptian department in the British Museum. And she worked with him. She later became a very incredible scholar in Egypt. She worked for Salim Hassam, who was one of the most renowned Egyptologists. But she also had this mummy that I mentioned before started coming to her, and it was Seti I, the pharaoh, back in the time period of 2300 BC.
How did she know that was actually Seti I?
Oh, well, she didn't at first, uh-huh. and later there was a high priest Ani, mm-hmm. and he actually came, and she did like automatic writing.
He came to her too, and she did automatic writing, and wrote his thoughts.
Right, that was part of her diaries that the high priest Ani explained to her even more. Who she was, but she had at that point conversations with Seti.
So I mean, Seti would talk to her in this in a dream state, or
he would come in his ka body. The Egyptians believe that we have a double ka.
What's a ka?
A ka is your body spirit.
Uh-huh.
And you have a body spirit right now
in your body.
This is a spirit.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another ka body, which the Egyptians believe was a higher form or the higher self. Or
soul. Like your etheric body or something.
Well, even a higher consciousness, let's say.
Okay.
And more memory of than just this physical body,
okay.
The spirit.
So Seti the First would come to Om Seti in that more higher vibrational body.
And that could only happen through the heart. It can only happen when the heart is open.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Om Seti's heart was open to receive that.
Yes, her heart was open to receive that.
Okay, because, of course, they were connected in that lifetime.
They were connected in the lifetime of, it was 3,200 years ago, it was 1,300 BC, that was the time of Seti. And so she was a priestess in the Temple of Isis in Abydos, and she fell in love. They fell in love. She fell in love with the pharaoh.
And she being a priestess and he being a pharaoh.
Right.
Fell in love, but...
And she became pregnant. Her name was Betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up taking her own life because she knew that at that particular time, the priests were so powerful. And mm-hmm. they had relegated the priestesses to a very subservient roles.
Uh-huh.
They would have killed her, and
if they found out she was with Om Seti, and it would have also been bad for him.
I think so
as well.
Yeah.
So okay, so she lived there. But the other thing about Om Seti is somehow you've gotten your hands on some manuscripts. There's actually a book written about Om Seti called "The Search for Om Seti" by Jonathan Cott. I think it was published in 1989, where I first heard about her, and I was just fascinated by her story and this parallel life she would live between her life with Seti the First and her normal life as a 20th century English woman. So besides that book, Om Seti had a manuscript that you came across.
Well, yeah, it was all through serendipity. The story is really amazing, and I do write about it in my preface. I
What preface?
Well, I haven't quite gotten the book out yet, but it's going to be out soon.
What's it called?
It's called Remembering Umsetti.
Oh, nice.
Remembering. And so anyway, all through serendipity, but I was told to contact this head archaeologist at Vassar, and I was given at the same day a copy of the Umsetti book that it was a friend of mine who was I was going to massage school at the time, and she was working on me, and she said, "Oh, you have to read this book." So the same, I was reading, I got Umsetti's book, and then when I was back at home, I was that day, that night, walking in a video store, I was given the name of this very famous Vassar Egyptologist.
Wait, you were in a video store where?
In Connecticut.
And why would someone give you the name of an
I have no idea. He just said I looked like I was interested in Egypt when I walked in.
You were interested in Egypt when you walked in.
No.
You were not. But how did, so this guy just gave you this very famous archaeologist number.
Right.
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
For no reason.
Completely.
So you were destined.
I was totally destined.
To, and now, and that was in the 80s, huh?
No.
When was that?
That was, well, no, that was actually 1990.
Okay.
And I didn't. I contacted Walter Fair Service, who was the head Egyptologist in at Vassar, and the head of the Chicago House and Luxor, and he had a dig in Egypt called Hierakonpolis. I contacted them and went to their house, which was very close to where I was living, and we became really good friends. But then I went back to school. I moved actually to New Mexico, and then it was 2 years later that I actually went back. And I mean, the story's incredible. But anyway,
you end up somehow from this archaeologist with manuscripts at Umsetti World.
Yeah.
And what were in those manuscripts then?
Where are they?
No, what's in the manuscript?
What were in the manuscript?
Yeah, what's in them? I mean, how many pages and what's in them?
Well, pretty close to 500 pages. And
unpublished.
No, some of them are published.
Oh, some
now.
Of them are.
Some
published.
Of them are published now, but the ones that I really concentrated on, and what she put into these manuscripts was her interpretation of the pyramid text.
Okay,
and
so we're back to the pyramid.
Well,
good.
It's very, very important.
No, because we got a sidetracked on who Umsetti was as
right.
We were talking about the importance of why we should look at Egypt now. And you mentioned the pyramid text talk to the first time where humans were connected to the source. So Umsetti has her own interpretation
right.
of the most ancient of the Egyptian.
It was her life. It was her life's work.
Working on the pyramid.
Was working her interpretation of the pyramid text. And she even told Zeni Elhani, who was one of her best, closest friends, who did co-author that book with Jonathan Cobb that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
that she really wanted her interpretation of the pyramid text, because she spent her whole lifetime on it, published at some point.
So, and it hasn't been.
Some of it has, some of it hasn't been now.
So you have that now. And what is her interpretation of the pyramid text? What does she say about it?
Well, what I'm ready to talk about here tonight
yeah.
is what has to do with the ancient healing practices.
What other stuff that you're not ready to talk about?
Yeah, not ready.
Why is that?
I'm not ready to.
You're not
focus.
Ready to, or you think the world's not ready
I'm
to?
I'm not ready to right now.
You're not ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to focus on what I think is the most paramount, because I think, you know, a lot of this has to come like in pieces, you know, for people to really be able to grasp the understanding.
But just a little background on the pyramid text. Where was it found?
Saqqara. Usually the oldest pyramid texts are found in old pyramids.
And it's on the wall of the pyramid at Saqqara?
It's in the tomb next to Saqqara.
And it's carved on the wall.
Right. And, then, and it's beautiful colors and scenes.
So it's in the tomb next to Saqqara.
Right, the tomb. The oldest
under
tomb.
The underground tomb there? I think I was in
above the... and underground, yeah.
Oh, I see. And they represent a kind of continuous text. I mean, it's sort of like an ongoing narrative from these, from the ancient
They're basically talking about the journey of the Dwat. And the journey of the Dwat is the journey of the soul through the different worlds, from the unconscious to the conscious. It's later it got interpreted into the coffin texts, and then later
the
into
Book of the Dead.
Book of the Dead, and in the Book of the Dead are some of the pyramid texts, and in that are some the Book of Gates, which was another thing that I was fascinated with, was the Book of Gates.
And what is that about?
The Book of Gates is about the 12 gates.
Mm-hmm.
I believe originally there were 7 gates.
Okay.
The interpretation, of course, has changed over time, and so it became very distorted. But the gates are about the different time periods. The sun is out, and then the sun goes under,
mm-hmm.
and goes under the horizon, and so that you go into the underworld. That's the way they chronologized it, and that the soul would have these different experiences, and there would be gatekeepers there. Mm-hmm. That we would have to literally say a password to get through the gate.
Okay.
Just very much like Indiana Jones.
Etheric gatekeepers or real live gatekeepers guarding these sanctuaries?
No, they were etheric.
They were non-physical.
I mean, I think more is being uncovered now about the real gates, and also the gates to the Assyrian, the gates, the water gates that we're seeing.
But just back to how old is the pyramid text, do they think? Like how ancient? 1,000, 5,000?
Yeah, I would say, the pyramid text probably goes back. You see, they believe they were copied from an earlier civilization.
Right.
And so,
an early Egyptian civilization or another race of people? Altogether?
Well, before the Egyptians, you have the followers of Horus and the companions of Horus, which is where Walter Air Service had his dig at Hierakonpolis.
What's Hierakonpolis?
Hierakonpolis is it's very, very old. It's on the other side of the Nile.
What other side?
From Abydos.
The east side of the Nile.
Yeah.
There's not many ruins on the east. Most of the ruins are the old temples on the west side.
It's near Edfu.
Oh, it's near Edfu.
It's in the middle
of
nowhere.
I've been to Egypt, and it was probably the most spectacular trip I've ever taken. And I was at Edfu. The temple's really very well preserved there. But this
later,
was
this
was a much older place. And so, your friend, the archaeologist, what was his connection to the pyramid texts at Hierakonpolis? Because you said he just found figurines there. Did he find fragments of the pyramid texts?
I didn't say
you said
that?
No, you didn't say it now, but you've told me before that he found these...
he found a lot of votives.
Votives.
Yes.
Which are these little...
Some are figurines. I mean, he was digging in where the old Nile was, and the Nile changed, of course, courses. And so he was finding votives and daggers and different things going back to 7,000 BC, which would be 9,000 years ago. He was wondering what the heck was going on, that these Egyptologists were talking about, civilizations starting around 5,000 BC, and he was finding votives and instruments that were, 7,000 to 10,000.
Okay, good. So let's go back to your study of Om Seti's text where you talk about the healing, right? You said what you're tuned into is what you found that's really a major healing aspect of her translation.
That's what she was fascinated with.
Uh-huh.
She was totally fascinated in the ancient healing practices, especially for women.
Mm.
And she, I never met Aum Seti. I do channel her now. She comes to me a lot. But I never met her in person. But she was dedicated to helping the Egyptian women get back their dignity, get back their power. Mm-hmm. And she wrote, I have some things that she wrote about five women, by being the first pharaoh was a woman, the first surgeon was a woman in Egypt. We're talking about Egypt a long time ago. Mm-hmm. She had five different women she highlighted.
Five specific women,
yeah,
that were.
She highlighted. And she was very, very dedicated. She knew the ancient spells. She was very much, and in the pyramid texts, you see, there are these spells. And
spells. What is a spell? Where you say words and you...
And you have to have the right intonation. And
what does a spell do?
It's just the sound of these very ancient sounding words. Like, I'll give you an example. Sa, sahem, sahu, sa, sahem, sahu. It goes back to actually early Sumerian. There were, these are very early.
What would that particular chant do? What did she discover that would do for women?
Actually, that was one that Jean Houston's husband told me that Aum Seti gave to him.
What's his name, Robert?
His name is Robert Masters. He was one of the first to write a book on Sekhmet.
He knew Aum Seti.
They both did, yeah. He loved Aum Seti.
He did.
Yeah.
And Aum Seti gave that to Robert Masters,
mm-hmm.
who gave it to you, who's giving it to us. Now.
Right, right.
And what did that mean? And can you say it again so we can...
Sa.
Sa.
Sehem.
Sehem.
Sahu.
Sahu, which means, before I don't want to keep repeating unless I know what it means.
Sa means universal energy, the universal energy of protection, holding things together, Sa. Sehem is the light that emanates from your body. The Egyptians believed that there were five bodies, but the light that emanates from the body is the Sehem.
Mm-hmm.
And Sahu. What do you think of Sahu?
Sahu. What does it feel like it means? I think it means something, or feels to me like the essence of the individual. So it means protection of the universal light and breath of the individual.
Right. It's like a real, like, I'm protected. Sa, sehem, sahu, I am seeing, or I'm saying to you, the protection of your light in your breath. I'm sa, sehem.
This is ancient Egyptian speaking.
Yes, this is. Yeah.
And these were prayers, or these were incantations. What would that?
Well, the Sahu is many interpretations. Some it's the light. Sehem is the light body.
Mm-hmm.
Sahu is these are Egyptian.
No,
Egyptian,
but what was it? A prayer, or was it? Are you saying it was a spell as well?
No, I didn't say that was a spell.
Oh,
I
so
was just
this
saying
is a prayer.
Incantations.
An incantation.
It didn't
for,
really have different.
No, but for what? For one, to protect oneself, to energize oneself? I mean, what would someone say that for?
I believe they would say that in recognition of who you are. As a person that I want to recognize you for your light, I want to recognize you for your light body and to protect you because I love you, Alan. Sehem Sahu.
Ah,
so it
thank
was
you.
More of a greeting.
A greeting of a blessing. It's like a
right.
blessing on you, right?
Right.
I bless you
I
for
bless
your
you.
Presence and your breath and your
you
and
go.
Your life. So that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So Ohm said he collected a lot of these types of phraseology, phrases or
she basically
mantras in a way.
Yeah, she studied for her whole life, basically, in Egypt. I mean, her whole life, I believe she died at 80 or 70, I forget.
In 1980.
Maybe 80.
In the 80s.
81, she died.
In 1981.
Right.
But let's go back to also the healing aspect that she discovered, because I think that's really will be important for the audience. So, you have these texts, and you've been reading it, her private
I've had text. Them for a long time.
Right, so you, as you go through it, you've gotten some flashes of insight and discoveries that, in a way, only you could have because of your training and background,
right.
And because somehow, serendipitously, these manuscripts have fell into your hands. So,
right.
In a way, they've been guided to be given to you. And through your background and education and intuitive knowledge, you've come up with your own insights into these texts.
Yes.
And that's what I'm interested in.
Right.
And your discoveries and what you've done with this work,
right.
too. And how we're going to go back to Egypt and start moving.
Right. Well, yeah. We've been discovering things in the Western Desert this summer that have been astonishing.
Like what?
Well, I mean, to me, what's really astonishing is that that this whole journey of mine,
right.
has been a mythic journey in the sense that it's been so led.
By the unseen.
Absolutely,
by
the unseen.
Right.
And so so I this summer I was in a little restaurant in Madrid, New Mexico,
uh-huh.
and I was told, you know, just get out. Talked to some people, and I was asked, you know, it was a little tiny restaurant, it was in the summer, and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was asked, like, well, what would you really like to do, Melinda? I didn't know these people at all. So I said, well, you know, I'd love to do this journey with Om Seti.
These people asked you this.
Yeah,
question.
These people asked me.
And you explained to Om Seti.
I said, I really want to go back to Egypt, and I want to do this pilgrimage that Om Seti did, that started at the Assyrian, where she would bathe, and she would dress in white, she would bathe in the waters of the Assyrian.
And the Assyrian, just so people can know, is sort of was ancient to the ancient Egyptians. I mean, they didn't even know
right.
the origin.
They still don't.
And the Osirian's like a big, what is it? I actually didn't see that.
Oh, the Assyrian is an underground water temple. Built with, they say granite. It's a very, you know, it's granite, huge megalithic blocks that do not compare with, they do compare with Saqqara and the blocks in the tombs that the pyramid texts are in. But those are the only two places.
Do they compare with the granite in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid? You know, those big granite
no,
blocks?
No, that's later. This is earlier.
I see.
Yeah.
So they go back.
They go back 10 to 20,000 years.
Okay. So.
The Assyrian.
Okay. So your journey, you said, was you met these people and you said you wanted to do what
right.
for the Assyrian?
Oh, well, I just, you know, I wanted to jump in the water again and I wanted to dress in white and I wanted to do what Om Seti did each year and go out to northern Abydos. And northern Abydos was the older part of Abydos where I was telling you the pilgrimages where people would come and they would do the pageantry of the Isis Assyrian mysteries. And then people would die there because they found the head of Osiris. And so, of course, Osiris was the god that went and brought light to the underworld. He was king of the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And so the underworld representing our unconscious and dying and going through the veils, through the gates. So
he represents the kind of overseer of this, of the unseen world.
Yeah, because he died and yet he has the eyes and he is this incredibly wise greening. You know, Osiris he's reflected as a green god because he's a growing, he's like the fertility, he's like the green man.
Mm-hmm. He's the early version. I mean,
yeah.
Or maybe even bluish, like maybe some of the...
He's green.
Is he green?
Yeah, he's green.
You mean he's painted green?
He's green.
As a fertility.
As the right. greening, yes. In fact, they have little coffins of Osiris, and so in his outline, and they plant seeds, and that's where the seeds grow.
Okay, so let's go back. So you're in a cafe in New Mexico. You tell people that you want to go, and you want to revisit the journey of Olmsted.
I want to go through the El Gape, which is, I did some of that, what I wanted to do, but I never went through the El Gape, which is this sacred gap in northern Abydos that you go through to the western desert.
But you told these people in this little cafe. In
that's New, what I wanted to do.
That's what you want to do. And?
Take some people with me and experience it, because she talked about ancient cities of light.
In the desert, in the western
no,
desert.
Through the El Gape, not even in the western desert.
Isn't that west is through the gap?
Yeah, but you know, she did this journey. Took her like 3 or 4 days.
By herself?
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. With a camel, you know, with camel. I think she probably had a couple other people. But it was her, it was a pilgrimage for her. And it was very special. And she did it every year.
Okay, but you told these people in New Mexico, but they added something to it. When you told them that that's what you wanted to do, they came back to you. Tell them that part of the story. Where they went and looked at the western desert where she would, and they found
right.
things in the desert.
Right. So anyway, yes, we went on a trajectory and we went out to the desert and I channeled the trajectory line and so yeah, we started finding incredible things.
Well,
and I really, you know, I don't even want right now to get into all the things that we
discovered. No, we don't have to get into things that we discovered, but I'm just saying from what you've told me, these people that you met randomly in
randomly.
The cafe helped you discover more of Olmsted's journey, in a sense. They helped fill in some of the pieces.
They helped fill in some of the pieces because
yeah.
they had an exploratory, they were exploration team. They had I had no idea. That's what they did.
Okay, that's the piece I wanted you to say.
Right.
That they were an exploratory.
I mean, it was
they were an exploratory team that did that for
a living.
Exactly. So getting back to Olmsted and the teachings and the healings that she discovered, uncovered, or revealed, let's talk about those particular healing techniques. Called one of them's called something you call the Sa Ra.
Right. The Sa
Ra.
The Sa Ra.
Ra.
Technique.
Okay.
Or even Sarah. Sa-ra.
S-A-R-A.
Yes. S-A-R-A.
Okay. And this is something you got from looking at the Olmsted texts.
I got this from years of study and looking at the Olmsted texts and also channeling Olmsted and a lot of my channeling the Book of Grace. I mean, all of it came in at the same, sort of the same time. And then Olmsted helped to refine it. She helped to, I mean, she would come. I would be doing a session on the opening of the heart. I didn't start with looking at the text and saying, oh, well, we should do the opening of the heart. No. It came through automatic writing. And I didn't intentionally want to do that.
So talk about the technique then, about the opening of the heart and how it's connected to this.
Well, it is. It's, you know, it's like a, it's a, for me, it is a major initiation.
To work on people or have them work on is also.
For people to say that they are willing to have the seals of their heart removed.
This is what Olmsted's work was to.
It was her work in a sense. And there's a, yes.
And you are now the kind of...
I never knew that because I didn't know necessarily what her work was because I didn't know her.
But you are now accessing this knowledge, this ancient knowledge, and bringing it out to people.
Right.
So What do you do? I mean, if you can describe how you tune in and the meaning of the heart and what you just call the union of Isis and Osiris. Talk about how the work is archetypal in the unification of the feminine and masculine forces.
Well, yes, I believe it's the first initiatory step in the raising of the Jed.
And what is that again?
And the raising of the Jed is the raising of the Kundalini energy up through the vertebrae, and so it's creating a light body. Mm-hmm. But the first step in all of this is the opening of the heart, to the seals to the heart. It's the removal. It is the seals. It's the seals that we have had put over us for protection. Mm-hmm. And later in the pyramid text, mm-hmm. it talks about how this seal was placed over the heart, that the eye, the Uja, the eye of Horus, Horus being the earlier tribe before the pharaonic rule, the followers and companions of Horus were around, and they were depicted as falcon, or they were depicted as falcon or
hawk,
right? And so they were the falcon or hawk headed, and they were semi tribal, mm-hmm. They nomads, uh-huh. And so they were there thousands of years before. But anyway, the coming together of northern and southern Egypt, the coming together of those brought those two lands together, and you know, the Egyptians, you know,
unified
that. But they still kept the early understanding of Zeptepi, which was the eye, the Uja, the eye of the hawk or falcon, and they sewed it over the heart, so that when
the eye of Horus,
the Uja, the falcon eye,
they sewed it over the heart.
Right. It was the only organ in the body that they kept in when they were doing the mummification.
The heart was the only organ.
Yes.
Because the heart, what was important to the heart?
The heart is the memory. Is the Egyptians believed that the heart was the seat of your memory, that it was everything. That it was your memory.
So the seals come from where then? If you're doing, where do the seals over the heart? Where? How did they? Did they come in this lifetime, or are they?
Well, they believed, and they talk about it in the later texts, because there's a lot of texts. You know, we're talking thousands of years of Egyptian texts. We're not just talking about the pyramid.
Right, right. And the great thing about Egypt is that it's probably the longest lasting. Imagine 8 to 10,000 years of history that are in that desert somewhere. But anyway, so the seals were put.
They believed that there were magicians. They believed that when you left your body and you went on the ark through the Dwat, which is the journey of the soul, going back to Amenti, that there were black magicians, there were forces that could take your heart, and that you would lose your memory of who you were, and you could literally become like a zombie, and you could be very easily controlled in your next life.
So that's why they put seals over the heart?
That was one of the reasons.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Right.
So then those seals were supposedly carried lifetime to lifetime. Is that it?
Yeah.
So the work now, and because the planet is changing and its vibration, is time to remove those seals and live in that.
In your memory.
In the
who
heart.
Who you really are.
In the heart. In the love. In the joy. And so that's why
but the memory of who you are. That remembering. Osiris was cut up in all these pieces and stripped. His members
and then you put back to remember.
And Isis and her sister, her dark sister Nephthys, goes and gets all the pieces of Osiris and remembers him, puts those members
back. That's the importance of this time is a time of remembering. And the heart, in a way, is that last piece. So your work is so important because it is helping us remember, which will lead us back to the heart, which opens the heart.
It heals the trauma that traps the heart. And so by not having a memory of who you are, a real memory of who you are, your real essence, your real power, your real strength, your real power you're so handicapped. We're all so handicapped.
But there is a reemergence. There's an awakening now where people are remembering who they are.
I'm saying yes, but it will come through. And I'm not saying this is the only way.
I think it is one of the only ways.
But
it's
I think
coming
it's
through the
one
heart.
Way.
It's to remember the essence of who we are. I mean, this is it. And so.
But then I feel the trauma. The trauma of the lifetimes of not remembering who you are. The trauma of war. The trauma of the cataclysmic events. The trauma. Is also
been sealed
in your
heart.
So
how do you go in this work, the Sara work, and help lift that seal off the heart?
Well, I'm just one person who does that.
Yeah, how do you do it? I want to know how you do it.
By intention and by the person who is willing to have the seals removed.
But what did Om Seti give you, or what did you intuit from the Om Seti work that helped you with this?
It's all carved in the seven temples. If you really want to be
the seven temples of Abydos,
yes, seven chapels in Abydos. If you really want to get completely specific, I'm just saying that's a very good place to go. I think probably 80 to 85% of all pictures of Isis with her man Osiris is with the ancient healing modality.
Right, the energy coming out.
Right,
of
the polarity energy, and then of course the big one was the judgment, and the judgment was the weighing of the heart. That Mot, the goddess Mot, was the goddess, very very early goddess in ancient Egypt. She was the goddess of truth and justice and love. And so if your heart was as light as a feather, then you would go to Amenti in your last judgment. If your heart weighed more than the feather, then Sufbek, the crocodile goddess, would eat you, and you would come back and reincarnate again because you weren't light. It's all about being light. The Merkaba is about, and the Merkaba is a term that was used in ancient Egypt. It's been very misinterpreted.
Well, it's been used in the ancient Hebrew as well.
Sure, it's been, but
it's a vehicle of light. But how did the Egyptians use it?
Mer means heart's desire. Ka is your body spirit. They believe that you have two paths. And it was only until you chose to live your life, till I choose life. This is the sign of the path. I choose life. When you do that, you are calling back the other part of your body spirit, the other spirit that has been journeying on the Milky Way.
The other Ka.
That is really wise, that knows the memory, comes back in.
And we become unified.
The ba.
And the ba is what?
Is the soul. The ba is always depicted in Egyptian iconography as a bird. And so it can fly between all these realms. So you become, when your heart is open, you pull in your ka body in this physical body. I believe you do not die. You do not have to die to incorporate your own Merkaba. The Egyptians later did. They believed, they distorted. There was a huge distortion.
Oh, it happens in every civilization.
of, you know, you had to die in order to connect with your God.
Right,
you had
right,
to, you know,
right.
That's not what's happening now.
Okay. So the Merkaba was the vehicle of unification.
Heart, body, spirit, soul.
How did they depict the Ka?
The Ka?
How was that pictured in hieroglyphics?
The Ka was always pictured with the
two hands up.
Like this.
And the Mer, was there a picture for Merkaba?
Mer is in a lot of different iconographies. Actually, Mer is a vessel sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Mer is the heart. The Av is the heart. Mm-hmm. But the Egyptians had different words for the heart, so that the Av is the heart, but then the Mer is also interchanged with the heart.
Mm-hmm.
The Mer is the Mer was very prevalent in the pyramid.
So now this return to the time of Septepi, or the original time, is this coinciding with this end date of 2012 and the work you're uncovering in the Egyptian text? I mean, it all seems to be coming together that we are remembering who we are.
We're choosing to, and that's the beauty, is that people are choosing to remember. They're doing it. I'm just a conduit, and I just want to say this. My dream, my intention, is for other people to learn the technique so they can teach it, or they can do it on their loved ones or people, so that it can spread exponentially. I'm not...
The technique of uncovering the seals of the heart, basically.
The Sahra.
The Sahra.
Yeah.
And you're teaching.
Yes.
And how can people find it?
Oh, I have a couple of websites.
Tell us.
www.sahratechnique.com.
Okay.
And then I have another one which I deal with the lineage work, which I feel is very important as well. It's again the miasms that have trapped our hearts, and we've become very unaware of those. So that's www.lineageancestry.com.
And we are also taking people to Egypt in October on a trip with Merlinda and myself and a few others to discover more of what's buried in the sands there, and also to have an experience. When I was in Egypt, I could spend all day in one of the little temples in the corner, and I just like felt so at home in the stone and the desert and the light. That light is, it's so dramatic as it comes through the shafts and those temple ceilings, and boom, and it's like you feel like you are really in ancient times. There's like 5,000 years has not passed. You are back the old time. So really exciting.
It's going to be awesome. Okay. And I just want to say that because of Om Seti, and because of all the work that I've done for the last 20 years with Om Seti and finding new discoveries, the head of the Supreme Council of Egypt of the Antiquities invited me personally and a small group to come to Egypt. And so we would be working with some very incredible people, Egyptians,
mm-hmm.
on discovering. My idea is going, doing the pilgrimage, having it documented.
As Om Seti did it, yes.
As Om Seti did it, but as Om Seti did it, as the early Egyptians did it before
mm-hmm.
her. She was only a conduit as well. And so to have that documented, and to have, you know, incredible archaeologists and geologists and, you know, antiquities, Egyptians be supportive of it. It's a real honor for
mm-hmm.
me to, I want to mention that, because it's a real honor to be asked.
No, it's very exciting.
It's
great. So we will be imitating or following the steps of Om Seti that have followed the steps of the ancient Egyptians. Yes.
Do you want to ask, do we have more time?
Yeah, no, we have a little more time. Yes. We have a question
yeah.
from our studio audience
yeah.
today. Did you have something? Anything? Did you have something?
So are these
the Osirian.
The Osirian, thank you. Hasn't been discovered.
It was discovered. It was discovered around in the 1800s by, I believe, Petrie. But the purpose of it, because now the water is filling up. I mean, the water's been filling up in these underground temples. I mean, in this underground temple for a while, but it's now exponential. And that's where the flower of life, the Osirian, is where the flower of life has been. Well, it's not. They say
burned into the rock.
It's burned into, like,
later. That's what Greg Braden says. I don't know if it's true, but maybe it is true. That
I don't know.
I'll have to find it. But thank you. That's good. So, yeah, the Osirian is still there. And people, it was a ritualistic bathing place, which is probably where they got the whole idea of baptism from, you know. And of course, it's more ancient than that. But the last question I have is getting back to the time of Zepi that you talk about, just so I have a real clear understanding of that. That is the first time?
Well, the first time is you know, what I mean, what is known by very scholared Egyptologists is that the first time goes back to 20,000.
What do you mean by the first time?
The villages that they found in the desert go back to 20,000 BC. This miasm of the modern Egyptologists saying that the Egypt civilization is only, you know, 5 or 6,000 years old,
right,
is
erroneous. Well, John West disproved that theory anyway by saying that the water erosion on the Sphinx was at least 10,000 years old. So it's obviously, and the older you go back in Egyptian civilization, the more complex the temples are. So how did these primitive people out of nowhere build these complex structures? No one's been able to explain that. But Zeptepi means the first time as a sort of creation? Is that what they mean?
No, they mean first time before a cataclysmic event took place.
So does that mean possibly Atlantis? Would you say?
Could very well be Atlantis. I mean, I truly believe that Atlantis played a part in this, but what is Atlantis? I mean, I really feel that these ancient healing modalities that I'm talking about that go back to Zeptepi come from a Syrian connection. Sirius was a major planet, and the Egyptians, their whole calendar was called the Sothis calendar. It was...
Sothis means what?
Sirius. So it was all around the planet Sirius. When Sirius was closest to the horizon, when it rose, when it was closest, they knew that the floods, the inundation of the Nile would happen.
That was the new year for the... That was around July 26th.
Right.
The Nile would flood. And so you're saying because they worshipped and honored Sirius so much, the Egyptian civilization probably got assistance from beings possibly from Sirius.
Well, I believe that they did. I believe that the Dogon tribe, the Malis, that used to live in the Western Desert. And they traveled to Africa because after
they traveled to Southern Africa.
Well, they, yes.
To southern, western, from Egypt. I mean, not by...
Yeah, I knew.
They left the Egyptian part and traveled through Egypt, but they kept the memory, you're saying.
What I'm trying to say is that very close to the Osirian, in the Western Desert, there was tribes that lived there, and the Dogon tribe lived in the Western Desert near Abydos. And that after these, because you can see all these geological drying up, and, you know, it used to be rainforest, and then it was dry, and all these different changes that took place, and it's in the Dogon mythology as well as their own mythology, that they left and they journeyed to, I believe it's more central Africa. Anyway, they left.
But anyway, they held the memory of this Syrian connection.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. That's really key, and they did actually know that there was a double star in the Sirius system long before scientists actually discovered Sirius as a double or triple star.
Digitarius being, right. Sirius being, right. is the densest, they talked about it being the densest material, and Sirius A, the brightest, and then Sirius C, which they just recently found, is the planet of women.
Of women.
Women.
This is what the Dogon said.
Right.
Well, we will see. We will see. So we're almost out of time. What would you like to leave people with? Because we covered so much. I think the memory of Om Seti, but what's the key? What can people take away with them and come with us each?
I feel that there's an incredible amount of hope and grace now in allowing yourself to release anything from the heart that is holding you back. And to be in the place of your true memory and your true glory of who you really are. And I feel this is the time, and you are the people, and heed the call. And come to Egypt with us.
Well, I think it's really going to be great on this trip because it awakens our ancient self being in these old temples. And it probably right. was the intention of the sacred architecture there to awaken the memory, the remembrance of oneself. So now, you're right, now is the time, and we are the people. And so let's go onward into the desert. So, okay, give your websites again.
www.sarahtechnique.com and www.lineageancestry.com. And thank you so much, Alan, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course. It's always nice to have you on the show. I've been talking to Marlinda Arnold about her discoveries of the Om Seti manuscripts and the Sarah technique and ancient Egyptian culture, really, which is still something many people don't understand. I would say no one really understands what the Egyptians were really about. So if you want to learn more, stay tuned to the show. We'll be doing more programs here. Thanks for listening. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And if you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you. Fearless